And at 27 minutes to 9, Gavin Steinhobel has joined me for the latter part of the morning show. Gavin, lovely to see you again.
Yeah, good to be back, Dave. It's such a warm, hot day already. Yeah, it's just started.
Man, I tell you what, this end of summer, towards the end of summer, I think becomes hottest and most humid. So there it is, nice and cool in the air-conditioned studio.
It is nice.
And we're going to be chatting, among other things, about the current... shall we say, furore around the expropriation without compensation bill, which was written into law by the president's declaration of the signature and intent and all of those good things, while the opposition was busy looking
in Davos
the other way.
Yes. I mean, Steenhuisen, who's their coalition partner, only found out about the signing off of this bill through social media on his way back from Davos. I mean, it's quite bizarre the way it was done, and I don't know why it's so clandestine, and I don't know why now. I sometimes wonder if maybe the ANC has noticed that interest rates are coming down and the economy is recovering, so they think, well, we need to deal with another body blow with a senseless piece of legislation like this. But it's probably worth investigating or looking closer at it, because... you know, I don't think there's many in the legal fraternity that think that this bill could possibly survive scrutiny by the Constitutional Court.
Is that so? Is it that badly drafted?
Yeah, well, so I think it's easiest just to go, first of all, to understand what expropriation is. And it's got, you know, all countries have some sort of expropriation bill, because it's conceivable that there will be times when the state needs to acquire land, for example, to build a dam or, you know, to push roads through or railway lines, or, you know, where there's a public interest or a need that needs to be met. And you might not always have owners that are willing.
There was a case in point in Belito when the taxi rank was proposed and that the land belonged to... to individuals. I think there was a couple of interested people that were involved in that, and there was an expropriation that was with compensation, and I think quite good compensation. However, I believe this new act does allow for negotiated settlement.
Let's get there. But so our constitution, and this is what was agreed in 1994 after CODESA and everybody sat down, the clause basically says yes, you can expropriate private property. But it's subject to compensation, so there was no way to expropriate property from private individuals without compensating them. That was one of the preconditions, and that compensation either had to be agreed with the person, and if you couldn't reach agreement, then the court had to decide or approve the amount that that person's going to be paid in light of what the property is worth. And normally they'd hear experts, valuators, and those sort of people, and they'd say, okay, well, you know what, your property's worth $10 million, the government needs the property, that's fair, they're going to give you the R10 million. Now, the land issue in South Africa obviously is a hot potato politically, and what we did is we had our Land Reform Act, and it empowered the minister to acquire property where claimants were previously dispossessed of that property through racially prejudicial legislation historically. So they could go, well, you know what, we used to live here, we were kicked off under the Group Areas Act or the apartheid government, and so we want our land back. And the minister would look at it and say, well, that's fine, let's go speak to the landowner, and we have to reach some agreement. Now, those landowners dug their heels in, and they said, well, you know, obviously we want to be paid a fair price. And, you know, the state didn't really enjoy the negotiations. And so very interesting that process, they redistributed almost 65,000, they did 65,000 odd claims under that system. It wasn't great. It was cumbersome. It was slow. It became corrupt.
Yeah, I believe only a small percentage of land restitution took place. The rest was settled in cash.
Mm. What the minister had the option of doing is he would go to the community that's claimed the land and say, well, you know, that's it. It's R28 million for these, 150 hectares or whatever. And you know, do you want the money or the box? and most of the people, in fact, 87% of claimants said, just give us the cash. We don't want the land. Yeah. First of all, we don't know how to farm it. And secondly, we don't have the capital to farm it. And so the government did at some stage indicate, well, you know, the state is going to help you. All right. And that help was never forthcoming. And I don't want to get into it, but there was a very good article on the Daily Maverick where they basically had a deep dive into all of these failed farms. Some of them were very productive farms when they were handed over, and there's just nothing there. Because the people weren't assisted with their farming. They didn't have capital to continue the farming. They didn't have the knowledge or the education required to farm, because it's now a scientific business. It's not just a question of pushing some stuff into the ground. So that just gives you an indication that the land issue, although it's been kicked around as a political football, it's not that important to the people on the ground. In fact, most of them took the money. Another problem is that when the minister acquires this land, so they want to go ahead and take the land, it's never transferred into private hands. It's always put in some form of trust, or it's held by the government as custodian of that land. And of that land, only 6% of it has been distributed by the government into private hands. So very little of it actually makes it to... So if you're a voter and you think, well, fantastic, they're going to take land away, don't think they're going to give it to you. Historically, only 6% of it ever gets into private ownership.
What does the rest of it
well, it's
become?
It's in government sort of control. And
But what do they do with it?
Well, apparently the total amount that they have on the books is the size of KZN and Mpumalanga together. So there is land available for redistribution, and the government should start at home and start giving land that it's been hoarding to private individuals. That's a good start. And then follow it up with assisting them to get them farming. But the point of the matter is, I don't think many people... Farming is not for everyone. I don't think many people really want to farm. I mean, I can't... You know, the other thing that happened coming into, 94 was that a lot of previously tribal land, the TBVC states and KZN, the old Zulu land... All of that was put into tribal trusts, and so it's trust land, which means that the people that live on that land will never ever have a chance to own their land. They'll always just be tenants, and they'll be beholden to the system where they have to pay somebody to live where they live. So the problem with doing that to land, and the problem with land being held by government, is it becomes valueless because nobody can buy and sell it. Because they don't own it, well, nobody can raise finance against it. You can't go to the bank and say, "I've got this hectare of land, and I want to, I want to plant something on it, and I'd like to take a bond."
You know, it's interesting that I was listening to Velenkosini Hlabesa, you know, he of the IFP fame. He's now in government in a very senior level, and his take on the Ingonyama Trust is that, you know, this whole notion of owning the land is a Western concept, a Western construct that, well, it's well and good for Western capital, but you know what, for our people, this system of tribal ownership, and you get a permission to occupy, which is tradable. Once you've got the permission to occupy a certificate, you then can start building your property and living on it in perpetuity. You can sell it, not the property per se, but the permission to occupy, etc. So you don't have to get bonds from government or from banks, etc. And
remember, you have to now build cash, because you can't go to the bank and say, I've got this letter from the local Induna that I can live here, and I'll give you the letter to hold while you give me money, and then if I don't pay you back, you take this letter and you go to the Induna and say, well, the First National Bank's going to live here now. It's not going to work. So, you know, unfortunately, that's a very naive view. I think it's dreadfully sad for all those people that they don't own their lands individually, because there's a lot of money there. You know, one third of this province is under the Ingonyama Trust. So it's quite remarkable that... Dave, strike one. It's quite remarkable that that people have allowed this to happen. I mean, I always thought 94 was brilliant for people who owned property at the time, because the property values just went up. you know, in neighborhoods, and that everybody was a millionaire overnight. You know, your house used to be 400,000 and now it was worth a million.
Yeah, because it was a wonderful windfall.
It was a windfall.
But it was a bit of a thing, because you might have made the money on the selling, but you had to buy somewhere else.
Yeah.
And the price had gone up pretty much
still,
everywhere.
You know, if you look at most people, you know, their property is their most valuable asset. And now we've got an entire swathe of this country where the people that live there can never have that most valuable asset because they can't own it. And so I think it's dreadful. It's just keeping them as tenants for the rest of, you know, for as long as this regime continues. Now, back to the expropriation bill, the problematic clause. The expropriation bill is pretty much a regurgitation of the old one, but the problematic clause is it says that it says yes, the Constitution does say you can expropriate, and you do have to give compensation. Now, I don't know how they think that this bill gets around that, but it says it may be just and equitable for nil compensation to be paid if the land is not being used and the main purpose is not to develop or generate an income from the land, and it's only being held to benefit from the appreciation in the value of the land. So, now, okay, fine. It's trying to open the door to what the Constitution says cannot happen, and that you must be compensated. Now, they say, well, if you just call the compensation null, there's still compensation. It's just valued at null. So, you know, that's going to be difficult, and it doesn't have that same process where you have to agree to it or a court has to sanction it. So, you know, the point of the matter is, if you want to amend the Constitution, and you want to you want to expropriate without compensating people, you have to go and get your 75% vote in Parliament and change Section 25 of the Constitution, which says you cannot do what you're trying to do in this bill, and that is not compensate people for land that you expropriate.
So where to from here? Because I believe the Democratic Alliance has now put the government, or the ANC faction of the government, now on terms. Mm-hmm. The parties like the Patriotic Alliance, I would imagine the Freedom Front Plus, all of those have come out to say, listen, this is not going to happen. We cannot stand by and allow this bill to pass. But you can't collapse the GNU, because if you do, you open the door for MK to walk in, become
the
new bedfellows of the ANC, and away we go. Because then compensation without expropriation without compensation will become a matter of just, there you go, rubber stamp.
Yeah, but it won't. It won't, because it still has to get through the court system. And it's still in conflict with our Constitution. There's clearly a conflict there where the Constitution says you must pay compensation. So you cannot now make an Act of Parliament that runs counter to the Constitution itself, saying, well, in certain cases, we're not going to pay compensation. And it's funny, because the situation there, the land is not being used and it's being held speculatively. Well, a lot of land's held speculatively by hotel groups and by property groups, and they go, well, you know, well, that's a well-situated, good piece of land. Let's hang on to it. You know, it might become 10 times more valuable, or it might be worth developing somewhere down in 10 or 15 years' time. You know, there's people in economics that take a long view of things, and they're normally the successful ones. So, you know, and now when you undermine the market, what is the state doing here? I mean, the state is not meant to be a player in the economy. It's meant to be an arbiter in the economy. So it sets the rules and people play by the rules, and it makes sure that they do. The contracts are honored and so forth, that there's no theft, corruption, fraud. Now, the government is becoming a player in land. And why? It's not the job of government. There are acts in place for redistribution of land. Yes, like everything our government did, it wasn't done properly. It became a corrupt business, and people are dissatisfied. But at the same time, as I said, there were 65,000 claims that were sorted out. So, you know, and I think even the right-leaning parties that are opposed to this bill, they're all in favor of the redistribution of land. It must just be done sensibly. Because if you think of how much agricultural land we've actually lost through claimants being unable to farm what were previously productive farms, I mean, the loss to our economy is massive. And then you also have to look at an economy like ours. I mean, there's this new global optimism You know, governments are interested in business again. They're interested in their economies again instead of all this other nonsense. Moving away from ideology and saying what works, you know. If it catches a mouse, you don't care if the cat's black or white, you know. And what we're saying, what we need in this country is direct foreign investment. That helps a lot. We're not going to get it because nobody's going to put their money into a country where the government's policy is, well, if we want something, we'll take it and we're not going to pay you for it. So this is a very, very bad signal to be sending out right now when the whole rest of the world is going in the opposite direction. But that's sort of been the habit of our ruling party.
Mm. Where to from here, Gavin? Do you think that the bill is going to be challenged and reversed?
I think it'll be good for South Africa and for the mood and the market and property in this country if it's challenged sooner rather than later. You know, where you don't wait for, you know, this sort of Damocles to hang over everybody's head until we see whose land they're going to try and steal first, because it is theft if you're not going to pay somebody for something. And I don't think that's a good mood to live under, and I don't think it's good for the economy, and I don't think it's good for our markets. So I would like to see the parties get together, get senior counsel on the job, and challenge this in court, because it's self-evident, just even to laymen. The Constitution says you can't do this, so why are you making laws that pretend that you can?
Good point. And, you know, from a legal mind, obviously you've got that information now, which hopefully will filter through to the powers that be, and that the process is undone rather than the damage allowed to continue.
Yeah, there's a sort of... Look, I mean, behind all of this is an ideological battle, and that is, are we a free market country, or are we a socialist country? And I think the ANC is very much, and I mean, in our own cabinet, we've got you know, a member of the Communist Party. So they're very much mired in the socialist communist way of thinking, and it's 30 years of it now, and there are no fruits. There just are no fruits. You know, we've got a massive dependent class on very few taxpayers. And it's not a good formula. At the end of the day, one thing you never hear them talking about is economic growth, you know, and how we're going to get that. Because all of the people that you see when you drive in here, all you know, the poverty and people still living in shacks and so forth, there's only one way to end that. And that is for our economy to thrive and for those people to get into better jobs, to educate their kids, you know. But at the heart of all of that, the thing that pays for all of that is a thriving economy. And we need to stop making these ideological decisions and start making good, sound economic decisions, because a robust economy is colorblind. Everyone's money is the same.
And the rising tide lifts all
it
ships.
Does.
That's
it
what
does.
We're looking for. And once again, a fascinating conversation with Gavin Steinhoebel. And I was hoping we could also move on to matters local, but maybe we should leave that until
next
week.
Yes, in fact, my intended guest was unable to come this morning, so it gave us a good opportunity just to unpack what's in the news, this expropriation bill. But he is coming next Wednesday, so we'll have a good chat about some local developments and things that are on the horizon.
And that will be exciting when Gavin Steinhoebel from Kloppers Inc. joins me again next Wednesday at just after 8:30 for another bit of hard talk. Gavin, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you, Dave.
This will be up as a podcast real soon, as they say, if you want to share the love. In the meantime, the music continues.